Explain gardening for the Gulf Coast with Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Hey, welcome. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning. This is going to be an interesting week coming up. Let's be aware of something that's just creeping up behind us. You may have noticed, and it looks like it could get worse. Let's be on notice, because it's gonna make a little bit of difference in how your garden grows, how your lawn grows, what you spend your time doing. We are behind on rainfall, particularly over the past 2 weeks. Some folks I know out in Hurley, and some folks over in Mississippi, south of Hattiesburg, some folks in Baldwin County are way behind. But the past 2 weeks, most of Alabama, a huge portion of Alabama, from Montgomery all the way down to Mobile, back over into Mississippi, into Florida, looks like less than 50% of normal rainfall, and in some areas down around 25-10% of normal rainfall. That ain't good. July is a time when we sort of overcome the heat of the Gulf Coast. We had a cool spell that came down that off the continent. That was good, but it just basically killed our rainfall. We were kind of falling behind a little bit anyway. So just a word of warning, if you're not going to get a lot of rain, if we don't get a lot of rain, we're not going to see it the first few days of this week, almost certainly, anywhere along the Gulf Coast, up to Montgomery. We might get a little better chance of rain later in the week, but you might have to start watering. It's a good time to talk about watering and how to do it. You can anticipate some of the problems. If you anticipate it, watering can be very easy. It can be very easy. But remember our rule. If you've just planted stuff, if you've just planted things just planted, and that means things planted this spring, shrubs and trees planted this spring, you need to water them frequently. But anything that's been in the ground for a long time, the most important thing is to water the ground, not the plant. You want the ground to be wet, about 3 to 6 inches deep. Okay? There's a lot of good reasons for that. It's where most of the roots are. That's one of the best reasons. And at about 6 inches, that's the level at which your oxygen declines, and it doesn't help to water much deeper than that. But 3 to 6 inches. Now listen, when you look at your watering, just use your finger. It doesn't hurt. Won't hurt your finger. Use your finger. Take a screwdriver if you need to sort of make a little wedge in the ground. And after you've watered, feel around in the ground to see how deep that water went. And you might be very surprised. Most of it's going to stay in the first few inches if you've just watered a little bit. It's not even going to stay in the first few inches, because it's really just in that first half inch. And what you really need to do is get that water down into the soil where the roots are and where it's impervious to the heat. It's a great way to do it. Let's just think about this coming up. It's a good time to think about it. A lot of things are actually going to be doing a little better right now than they usually would. I suspect many lawns actually may do better than they would under normal July conditions, because the ground's not so saturated, and so it's a good thing. But let's think about that coming up. Hey, here's another thing that I'm thinking about today, and it's an issue. It's worth thinking about. We're going to talk about it because I think Peter Toler is going to be on the show today, and we're going to look at it. It's about live oaks is ultimately where we're going to be, and we're seeing something terrible happening to the live oaks along Dolphin Street and Broad Street and around Bienville Square. I ain't the mayor. Listen, what the terrible thing that's happening is these live oaks are getting little red flags all over them. man, what is causing it? What terrible disease is causing this? Well, let's start here. You know, we feed animals, don't we? You know, I'm not sure why. We got pets. We got dogs. We got cats. We try to treat cats as if they're wild things that are okay for us to feed. That's okay. Dogs, you know, we have our problems with dogs. We got to figure that out. But now we feed wild things too. And I'm not sure why we do. It's interesting, but I can tell you this, and it's important in this world where we're feeding birds, deer, everything. You know, there's a big controversy right now about feeding deer, if you're not aware of it. It's important to understand that feeding deer for hunters and feeding birds and feeding raccoons and feeding squirrels isn't about making things better for the birds and the deer and the squirrels and the raccoons. It's about entertaining yourself. And that's okay. We entertain ourselves in many ways, and probably feeding the birds and watching birds may be better entertainment for you than watching television, for example. But you better recognize that it really doesn't benefit the birds, and it doesn't benefit the squirrels, and it doesn't benefit the raccoons, and it certainly doesn't benefit the deer. We should have a show on that. I'm really worried about how the way we're feeding deers is going to increase problems for deer in the future. But why do we feed animals? Why do we feed animals? It's a good question. We feed them to entertain ourselves. That's the best thing. What do we get out of that? I don't know, but it's worth thinking about. Does it help the animals? No. And let me tell you about the squirrels, because it's a real interesting problem right now. We've been feeding squirrels in Bienville and all over the city for in a lot of ways. If you feed birds, you feed squirrels. It's inevitable, don't you? Yes, you got tons of squirrels all around your feeder. In Bienville, we feed peanuts, and boy, it has a huge impact, because there are many pounds of peanuts fed to the squirrels in Bienville. What does that do? It allows, the most important thing is, it doesn't allow each individual squirrel to live longer, but it does allow each squirrel to reproduce more rapidly. So we've got more squirrels in Bienville Park, just huge numbers of squirrels in Bienville Park, Bienville Square, and it's having an impact on the squirrels. Let me tell you why. All of this red flagging we're seeing around the city, Peter's going to come on and talk to us about it. All of this red flagging we're seeing in the live oaks, limbs dying all over the place in the live oaks, it's the result of squirrels. Squirrels gnawing. Squirrels doing what squirrels do. Squirrels love to gnaw. They got teeth that would grow through the tops of, you know, that would grow through their jaws if they didn't have, grow through their skulls, if they didn't have some way of chewing those teeth down. So they're continually gnawing. They're making nest materials. They're eating all sorts of things. They're chewing on the live oaks. Now, if it were just one squirrel, you wouldn't even notice. You wouldn't even think about it. But we've increased the squirrel population that so much that the squirrel population is beginning to affect the live oaks. And the live oaks, and we're going to talk about this with Peter, the live oaks are actually getting wounds and damage that are causing the live oak limbs to fall. Around Bienville Square, it's endangering the live oaks. So what are we doing? It's like we're feeding the squirrels. The squirrel population has ballooned, and the squirrels are basically eating themselves literally out of house and home. And that's something we have to think about when we feed animals. It's something I would encourage all of us to think about. We're going to talk a little bit about that on the show today, because it's having a huge impact. I don't know how to fix it, other than to let you know, other than to make you aware that, boy, feeding wild animals has consequences. Feeding animals has consequences. And we need to understand why we do it, and we need to understand what those consequences are. And we'll talk a bit about that on the show today. Just something to think about, something that could cause problems for you in the long run. I could tell you about raccoons, and we'll probably have to talk about raccoons since I'm having to deal with them a lot. We'll be back. Give us a call this morning, 251-343-0106. I notice we got a lot of callers. We're going to be back with you. Hold on.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Sounds to see you sort of sweaty. Hey, welcome back. Gulf Coast Sunday morning. It's just Plain Gardening. But we talk about a lot of things. And we're going to talk a little bit more about this feeding the animals thing. And the consequences for us and for the animals, not always good, not always good. I think Peter's going to be on. We're going to talk a little bit more about that this morning. We have some callers already, though. Mary Frances, I'm going to talk to you. We're going to talk about beans, too. But let me get some of these callers out of here. And well, not out of here. We're going to get we're going to talk to the callers. We're going to deal with their questions. And then I want to talk to you about the beans. It's a great question. Don't let me forget to talk about beans this morning. It's a really good question. And don't let me forget to talk about the Mobile Tensaw Delta and ash disposal. That's an interesting subject. Hey, we have a caller from Silver Hill. Is that right, Charlie, about trees? Joseph, I'm listening. What's up? Joseph, you there?
Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Bill, about 3 years ago, I bought two large Schumard oaks. And the oak trees came in steel baskets. And the folks who planted them said to leave the steel baskets on the trees. And over time, I've started to wonder whether that's going to be a problem with the growth of the tree.
You know, that's an interesting question. I don't like the idea of leaving the steel basket on there. I think it does provide an opportunity for root girdling in some cases. I don't know that we've ever been able to demonstrate, but trees have coarse roots. If it were a palm, I'd say, nah, probably not a big deal. Or if it were a tree with very fine roots, I'd say not a big deal. But things like Schumard oaks have really coarse roots. And you can imagine as they try to grow through this that it can create some problems. Now, mostly the tree may grow around it and solve the problem. But depending on the spacing, those roots can get coarse enough that they may not, that it could be a problem. What is the spacing on the steel basket? Do you remember? What was the spacing in the holes?
Probably 4 inches between each square.
And that would worry me because it's easy for roots to get much bigger than that. Now, it'll be a while before that happens. And that's the good thing for the people who planted the oak because they won't be around when it finally happens.
Right.
It does worry me. You know, one of the solutions is, and I often recommend this, don't get trees in large sizes. Trees are going to grow very fast here. And a tree at 6 feet is going to outgrow a tree at 15 feet any day. And I mean, when I say outgrow, not only will it grow faster, that 6 foot oak will grow faster than the 15 foot oak when you transplant it, but it will actually grow so much faster that it will almost always catch up in height within 3 or 4 years. So it's and then you don't have, you don't end up with some of the root problems that you end up with older trees. One of the other problems with older trees is that they don't produce the kind of juvenile growth of new roots. A younger tree is really prepared to produce a tremendous number of young stringy roots, and they really move those out. Older trees, they actually don't produce as many of those stringy roots for whatever reasons. So just be aware of that when you're doing it. I worry about the basket. Yeah,
only after listening to your program for 3 years that I've learned to ask those kind of questions.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Well, listen, so what are we going to do about the basket? I don't know. We can hope that the basket deteriorates, which it may by the time the roots get to be 4 inches in diameter, but there'll be plenty of roots that are 4 inches in diameter or larger. Does it help to go in and cut some of those roots? You know, it might help to cut some of the roots on the surface if you can get to them. That if you can, if any of them are apparent on the surface.
Okay.
Because it's going to be those top roots that are going to be the most, it's going to be the roots in the first 4 inches that are right. going to be most critical. So, it's a great question. If Chris Francis is out there, I'd like to hear if Chris has heard, of any problems with these baskets. If I were getting it done, I'd say, okay, you can leave the basket on there, but I'm going to cut the top round of steel off of it. You know, just use some bolt cutters and cut all that stuff off the top. And that way I don't have to worry. So that's my view of it.
All right. Well, I appreciate it. I've learned my lesson.
All right. Well, and listen, it's going to be a while before you see any problems. But if you can cut that first tier off without actually doing damage to the tree, how long ago did these get planted? 2 years ago? 3 years ago?
3 years ago.
Yeah. It's going to be hard to mess with them. But if you see any metal near the surface, I would definitely take my bolt cutters and just cut it.
Okay. Thank you, Bill.
All right. Thank you. Steve, I'm listening. What's up?
Hey, Bill. How are you?
Good.
Hey, good. Hey, I'm a kind of a new listener. I go back and listen to a lot of your podcasts on the website.
Oh, good.
And I'm kind of new to all the gardening. So one question I had, because my extension office always asks me every time I go up there with a question, is the pH level of my soil. And I never really hear you talk about that much. And the people that I knew growing up that had great gardens and yards, they never talked about it either. So I'm a little baffled because it seems like they really want to get technical.
Okay.
Does that make sense to you?
This is good. This is a great question. And what I'm going to say will drive extension agents mad, because the little sheet that says this is what you're supposed to worry about, it kind of simplifies it to the point of just saying, oh, pH is really important. Well, first off, let me say pH can be important. It can be very important. It is the and what pH does is it measures the ability of soil to do chemical transformations. That's basically what it is. It is, so for example, in acid soil, the pH is low, and iron becomes very available to a plant. That's can be pretty important. In high pH soils, alkaline soils, sweet soils they're sometimes called, that's pH above 7, then phosphorus becomes very available, and iron is no longer available. So that actually limits the growth of plants in some ways, just as acid soil can limit the growth of plants in other ways. But it's about platforms for chemical transformation so that plants can absorb certain chemicals. Here's the problem, and you have identified it. People who have good soil don't have to worry about pH. And good soil is about having organic matter, because the organic matter serves as the platform for all of these chemical transformations, just like pH does. Mm-hmm. So organic, with organic soil, soil that has lots of good topsoil, broken down material, the platform for all these chemical transformation occurs anyway, even without having to adjust the pH very much. So that's the key. pH is for depleted soils. It's for worn out soils. It's for soils that have no organic matter left, that have been farmed to death. And in those soils, you have to adjust the pH precisely to get the kind of plant growth that you want. If you have lots of organic matter, you don't have to worry as much about the pH. Now, there's still reason to add lime, and there's still reason to adjust the pH for certain things like beets. and you have to worry a little bit about the pH if you're growing things like blueberries. But the fact of the matter is, organic matter sort of changes the way we look at it. If you've got plenty of organic matter, the pH matters less. And gotcha. Then it's a case by case. Yeah. So gotcha. That's it. And it is most of these recommendations are for soils that have just been totally depleted. So my goal is add the organic matter, and then you don't have to worry about this chemically precise pH measure. Because the organic matter is thinking that out for you. It's already got all of the platforms there. It's got all of the readiness to do the transformations, and plus it does a lot of other things as well.
Okay.
So,
all right,
there
well,
it
thank
is.
You, Bill. And if you, I know you said you got 20 seconds left, but if you have any other resources that you might want to mention for, kind of like beginners, please, I'll just hang up and listen. But thank you. Your show has been very informative in that part.
Hey, great. Thank you a lot. Well, so we'll be back and talk more about it. We got to listen to some good music now. We'll be back.
Because everything gonna fall, you get down. On your bended knees, I ain't gonna dig no more taters. I decline, I ain't gonna pick no peas. Because everything is on the phone, you know you got to go. I'll get down on your bended knee.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. You know, here's a funny thing. We were talking about pH, because you hear a lot about it on TV and other places. pH is the kind of thing, changing pH is the kind of thing that people can put in a bag and sell to you and get a price for it that works. So people talk about it because it's marketable. It's an important thing to understand that a lot of the advice that people give you depends on whether they can market that advice. And, it's why I don't make any money doing what I do. Because it's hard for me to monetize good thinking. So you can put pH modifiers in a bag and sell it off the shelf. And this is okay. It's fine. And so naturally, people talk a lot about pH because it allows them to sell their products. But here's the truth. Here's the truth. pH is only one indicator of whether your soil is healthy. And healthy soil that is high in organic content, like the original soils that we found, it could be in the form in the longleaf. It was one kind of organic content, and in forest with lots of oaks and hickories, it looked a different way. In forests that are in prairies or aren't forested, prairie grasslands, the organic matter looked a different way. But all of those soils, the one thing they had in common was lots of organic matter, lots of dead plant material that had accumulated, and bug carcasses and whatever else that had accumulated over hundreds and thousands and even sometimes hundreds of thousands of years. And that topsoil was very important when we first came here. It's why Alabama was famous for its crops. And then as we farmed it, we destroyed that topsoil. We destroyed the organic matter content. And it wasn't eroded away. It was just, I like to talk about, or maybe I don't like to talk about, the fact that it was pooped away, basically, by the bacteria that we cultivated and encouraged in those soils by plowing. And it just disappeared in our tropical conditions, nearly tropical conditions. So this was the big problem. But here's the important thing. Without the organic matter, you have to be very precise with your pH. With the organic matter, you don't have to be as precise. And Charles Mitchell, great agronomist at University of Auburn University, I think he's retired now. In fact, I need to talk to him, catch up with him. He was going to come up with a soil test that sort of acknowledged this, that sort of said, you know, homeowners don't need this agricultural soil test. It doesn't really tell them whether they have healthy soil. It only tells them how bad the soil might be. So it doesn't tell them whether they have healthy soil. And it doesn't tell them what to do in healthy soil, because if you have plenty of organic matter in your soil, if your soil resembles the original soils that we had in Alabama, here's the funny thing. The soil test doesn't work. It skewers the soil test, because soil tests aren't designed for good soil. They're designed for bad soil. So adding organic matter is basically the way to fix these problems. Now, you will still have to change your pH a little bit if you're growing certain types of things. If you live in a prairie in central Alabama on the Black Belt, or around St. Stephen's or somewhere else where there's limey soils, you're going to have to think about, how do I make that soil a little more acid, because I need iron to be available. And prairie soils, those limestone soils, have a naturally high pH. Most of our soils have a naturally low pH. That is, without organic matter, the pH is very low. So around Mobile, the pH is going to be very low, often around between 4 and 5. And you may need to raise that pH just a teeny, teeny bit in order to grow blueberries, even. But it's just something to think about in different places. When you add organic matter, it doesn't lower the pH in most of our soils. It actually raises the pH. But it's certainly, more importantly, that organic matter makes the chemical transformations that are important to plants, it makes them much better. Better than just adding lime. It's amazing how much difference that makes. So there it is. We got a caller. Rich, I'm listening. What's up?
Bill, I've got a problem with my lemon tree.
Okay, I'm listening.
He looks very stressed. The leaves are turning yellow, and he just looks bad.
Let's go back. Is it in a container or is it in the ground?
In the ground.
Okay, and is it a Meyer's lemon or is it a Lisbon lemon? Do you know?
Meyer.
Okay. So, how long has it been planted there?
2 years.
Okay. Is it possible that area is getting a lot of excess moisture and then drying out really badly?
Possibly.
Yeah. Is it near your house?
Yeah.
How close to the house?
25 yards.
Okay. That's far enough away from the house. So at this point, I would most worry about the fact that moisture levels in the soil are fluctuating and that oxygen levels aren't very good in the soil around it. Is it at all possible that this tree was planted too deeply?
No, I didn't do that. I planted two of them together, and they're both, one of them's doing real well. They both had a ton of lemons on them this year, and then one of them is just starting to wilt and turn yellow and get, you know, falling apart.
Yeah, yeah. So inevitably, that's going to be some type of root issue, and so we got to figure out what's going on at the roots. The grass is pretty well cleared away from these trees. Is the grass very close to the trees?
A little bit. It's a little bit close. I try to keep it away from the trunk and the roots, but there's a little grass around there.
And pull that grass away as far as you possibly can. That certainly helps a lot. I would mulch. You want a space right around the trunk where there's no mulch, maybe about 6 inches around the trunk. But from 6 inches around the trunk out to about 3 or 4 feet on either side, I would use a mulch and not have it compete with the grass. That can make a lot of difference in how the roots develop and how much oxygen the roots have. My biggest concern is that your soil there is probably, I mean, my best guess is your soil is probably getting too wet during periods when it rains. The roots are rotting.
Yeah.
And then when it dries out, it's going to show up because it doesn't have any roots left. You see what I'm saying? And so during the drought, it really gets stressed. If you water it, it can sometimes make it worse because you're continuing to create those wet conditions that are causing the roots to rot.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it sounds like you've got a wetness problem. So what I would recommend is that, the best solution at this point, if it survives, I'd go ahead and dig it up now. Can you dig it up and either move it or raise the soil level a little bit?
It's pretty big.
Yeah, okay. So the other solution then is, since it's hard to change the soil that it's growing in, the other solution is...
But the one right next to it's doing fine.
Yeah, and it may have to do with different soil conditions there. It may not be getting as wet. I mean, I assume that these trees are more than 10 feet apart.
No, they're about 10 feet apart.
Yeah, okay. That can be enough to just change the soil conditions enough that the plant does well.
I'm going to pull everything away from the roots and hopefully it'll dry out.
Yeah, and it probably, is it wet now?
Well, it hadn't rained in about a week, so, well, it's rained, about 4 days ago?
Yeah, yeah. It's rain's been really spotty, so it's hard to tell. It's rained some places and not others. But it sounds like it's excessively wet there, and that's going to be the big problem. And I'm not sure, since it's an internal problem, since it's a drainage problem in the soil itself, it's going to be hard to fix without actually lifting the plant or moving the plant. It's hard to change the internal conditions fast enough.
Yeah.
Removing the grass, putting a mulch on it that's not too thick, can certainly help. It certainly can help.
Can grass clippings be good for blueberries and citrus?
Their grass clippings are great. Okay. As long as there's no herbicide on the grass.
No.
So if as long as there's no herbicide and as long as you don't put the grass on too thick. If it gets on too thick, it tends to mat out, and then you increase your oxygen problems. In essence, what's happening in the ground is that the water is driving out all the oxygen. There's very little oxygen left in the soil, and it may have to do with the fact that the soil itself didn't have a lot of organic matter, and so it doesn't have a lot of oxygen anyway. But that excess water is driving out the oxygen, and that creates conditions in which rotting bacteria can really thrive.
Yeah.
And it creates conditions when in which the roots don't thrive because they need oxygen. So that's kind of what I think's happening.
Okay. Well. Sorry, all right. Thanks a lot.
All right. Well, you know, how do you fix the problem like that? That was sort of something built into the soil a while back. We'll think about it a little more, but we got another caller, Charlie. We only got 10 seconds before the break. Ooh. So we're going to be back. Y'all hold on. We're going to get to you here in just a minute.
And their brothers in arms. So it went for Joseph Warren. And it should have been different. It could have been easy. His reign could have saved him. But a country unborn needs bravery. And it spread like wildfire.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Welcome back. It's Gulf Coast Sunday Morning with Plain Gardening. Boy, we got lots of issues we ought to follow up on this morning. You know, this lack of organic matter is a big deal in our soils. It's the thing that you don't hear people talk about on TV. Because organic matter is something that you can't, it's hard to sell in bulk. And organic matter is the thing your soil needs the most. It needs it the most. Forget the nitrogen, forget the pH. If you don't have organic matter, none of the rest of it matters. Edna, boy, you have been patient. Thank you for holding on. You
well,
there?
You're quite welcome.
How can I help you?
Well, I live up around the Agricola area, and
yes, ma'am.
I have never had this problem in my life, and I'm 80 plus. Chiggers. Man, I'm telling you, I can't go to the mailbox. I can't go in the yard without them coming in on me or coming in on my dog. And I don't know what to do to get rid of them.
Boy, I hate chiggers. So, and if there was an easy solution, and only I knew it, then I would be a rich man.
It's the babies that bite, and you can't even see them.
That's right. So chiggers, red bugs, are baby mites. They're a type of mite. Only the juveniles do the biting. The adults don't do biting at all. They go and do other things. In conditions where it is very, there's certain times when the chiggers can get worse. How much rain have you had this year, by the way?
Oh, well, just like everybody else, we have rain, and it'll rain 3 or 4 days, and then it won't rain at all for another week. But,
yeah.
My yard drains real well, so I don't have any standing water anywhere.
Yeah, and I think
and
that the condition.
I keep my grass cut. Weekly.
I think the conditions for chiggers may be ideal when you get sufficient rain, when you get some rain, but periods of dry in between. And so I think that could be part of the problem this year. It may be the reason you're having it a little bit worse. Let me tell
we have this kind of weather all the time up in George County, never noticed them before.
Yeah, so you know, it could be lack of a winter. That's a good question as to why you're seeing them now.
Well, I understand they've even had it on the news that they were really bad this year.
Yeah, and so.
But like I say, I'm 80 years old, and I've never been bitten by chickens before.
Yeah, well, Boy, I've had plenty of chigger bites. Let's, you know, here's an interesting thing. Winters may, the lack of a winter may have some impact on overwintering chigger populations. It could. It's patterns of rainfall and dry weather have big impacts on chigger populations. So from year to year, the chigger population can change dramatically. One of the interesting things, and here's, it's just an interesting thing. In the past, chiggers and ticks in South Alabama and South Mississippi, the areas my family grew up in, the areas I grew up in, those areas, particularly, say 50, 60, 70 years ago, chiggers and ticks in many areas were not as bad because of fire. When the wood still burned, and everything didn't have to burn, but when there was a fire that came through the grasses and the grasslands, it lowered the populations of chicks and chiggers. Now that we've got ticks and chiggers, now that we have these thickets of woods, with lots of deer, and lots of other mammals coming through there and moving through these pastures, I think we're creating ideal conditions for the ticks and the chiggers to thrive. So I think we're actually building populations of ticks and chiggers because of the way we've slightly modified the landscape. Now I think that this year your problem probably it was a winter weather combined with summer and rainfall and spring rainfall, just a series of conditions that made it ideal for chigger populations to explode.
Well, I didn't
something
know whether
about
there was
the
any
weather.
Product I could spray where I let my little dog. I let him out on a leash. She's a Yorkie, and
I'm
telling
so
you,
it's going to be
ticks or fleas because I give her a pill, you know, to take, and they die.
Yeah, well, they do, and they drop off. It's just that they've already done the damage by the time, because of the way they operate. They actually don't dig into your skin. They actually just secrete a little bit of digestive juice, and it leaves a little. It's that scar that's the problem, and they drop off pretty quick. But by that time they've already sampled you, and it's the sampling of you that really. Is the problem. That's what causes the itching.
And they itch.
Like
but
crazy.
I just didn't know what I could spray in my yard or my house, or I could spray my dog or whatever, you know.
Yeah, and I don't think it'll help.
I can't really find out any information when I go to the stores because these people that are working in these departments don't know anything.
Well, they don't. So, but there is no miracle cure for it. I mean, permethrin can help in areas where you walk. Permethrin. And it may help. And even very, I think a pyrethrin insecticide, P-Y-R-E-T-H-R-I-N, not pyrethroid, but pyrethrin can be very effective because basically it's one time, but it would take a lot of spray. I mean, you're going to have to get a backpack sprayer to do the kind of coverage that you would need to discourage those populations.
If I spray one area where my dog goes out, will they come over from the other areas?
Yeah, they can, but you can kind of keep them at bay, and that's the problem is they do move. If you can, if it's a big, how many acres do you have? Do you have a lot of acreage or just two acres?
Yeah, that's
almost too small. You know, burning makes a huge difference if you can do it safely. I wouldn't do it yourself.
No, can't do that. I got a beautiful lawn. I sure don't want to burn it.
Yeah. And so these are a problem. Even in the lawn areas, you're seeing a problem with the chiggers.
Well, everything is lawn except the people. On the lot next door, it's just overgrown.
Yeah. Well,
so there's nothing on it. So, well, I just keep trying. Every time I go to the mailbox, I have to spray my legs and everything else. Otherwise, I'm bringing them back in the house.
Yeah, so pyrethrin is the thing, and it's they don't survive long in your house because they don't like conditions too dry, and there are lots of other problems. But pyrethrin, any product with a pyrethrin in it, pyrethrin, use a mask when you're spraying any insecticide like that, and you're going to have to use a large sprayer because it's going to take a lot. Usually these sprays are designed for small areas. But a pyrethrin that is designed for use in yards could be very effective, at least for a few weeks. And it may be long enough to sort of break the cycle of the chiggers.
Mm. I know that's going to get rid of them. They go back under the ground when it comes cold weather.
Yeah, they don't go underground so much, but they do survive.
I'm going to Tractor Supply here and see if I can find any of this.
All right, okay.
And I thank you for your help.
All right.
The fire ant condition, if we could solve it, we'd both be rich, wouldn't we?
That's right. Okay, jiggers have been around for a lot longer than fire ants, yeah. All right, we got to take a big break. It's a big break.
Me and my best friend Lillian in her blue tick hound dog Gideon, sitting on the front porch, cooling in the shed, singing every song the radio plays.